Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. This is Live Events. In the dead of night, when thy winter wounds shall not be healed, the wind which howls about your being. In the dead of night, when your friends have gone, and you sit huddled by the castle's fire. In the dead of night, when all is dark, who will you be tonight? The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVMTOR, ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knott.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, madame and messieurs, boys and girls, and mes enfants. Welcome to another edition
of the Night Zone.
I am your host, Colin Knight. Tonight, in the Night Zone, we bring you further evidence of advanced technologies using Earth science. Evidence that our ancestors had advanced technological experience and manipulated terra energies to create structures more complex than the Rubik's Cube. In the shadows of the Night Zone tonight,
Mr. Stephen Myers,
author of
Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid, when we return. You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Hit MTOR.
The Aquarian Age is a time of greater spontaneity. It's going to be a time where the era of the great faith-based religion of the Piscean Age will fade and be replaced by religions that are more scientific. Rather than to believe, the next 2,000 years is about knowing.
Night Zone Radio is a research tool for those who wish to investigate, understand, and become informed on paranormal activity. The following information is presented in good faith as we continue to seek the truth, thinking outside of the box. And we remind all listeners, KVMTOR, ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knight.
And I tell you, if the legal ramifications of the liability clauses get any longer when we start off the show, we're going to run out of time. At least at the time of the ancient Greeks, there have been considerable debate on how Egyptians constructed King Khufu's Great Pyramid of Giza. More importantly, why it was constructed. Now, most lines of history claim pyramids were built to bury kings and queens of Egypt, to help them to the afterworlds. But originally, the Great Pyramid was constructed for a much different reason. Recent findings of tombs and pictorials, as well as ancient tools and underground caverns, continue to unearth technological amazements. Stephen Myers is the founder of Pharaoh's Pump Foundation and author of Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid. And Stephen, it's great to chat with you tonight.
Well, thank you, Colin. This is a tremendous opportunity for me. I appreciate it.
No problem. Before we get to pyramids and the ancient technologies and the likes, let's just lay some background work down. You are the founder of the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation based in Oregon. What is the foundation all about?
Well, we're a 501c3 nonprofit foundation. We were established by a bunch of fellows with a similar interest about the Great Pyramid, wanting to understand how it was built. So we ultimately founded this nonprofit foundation to do just that, to understand the Great Pyramid, how it was constructed, and why.
Right. So the foundation is basically your R&D, your research and development tool, and your promotion tool.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And
a tool for fundraising for some of our activities, and also it formalizes what once was an informal group of independent researchers that I now have this nonprofit foundation to do a number of goals, both educational and also technological research.
Yeah, and I think it's well to note that this is nonprofit. This is just from the scrapings that you receive from what you can dig out of the ground, so to speak. This is pure research, isn't it?
Yeah, it's certainly just research, just people that want to know what the Great Pyramid is all about. And ultimately, we feel that it is an example of very ancient but high technology that can help our modern but troubled world.
Yeah, well, they certainly had some advances on us as far as understanding what nature gave us.
Absolutely.
Their manipulation of water, which we'll get to, their manipulation of water to this day surpasses anything that we could produce.
I think so. I agree with you there 100%.
Yeah, I understand the idea of the foundation. I think that's a noble cause. And you have the website, and we'll get to the website addresses a little later in the show. But the pump website, fascinating. I was on that website for hours reading your information. It was great. I just wanted
I appreciate that.
So which came first, your curiosity of the ancient technologies or your research for energy-efficient, non-polluting technology?
Well, my interest was in... I've always been interested in technology. I'm a ham radio operator. I collect old one-lunger engines, which are old engines that they used to use on farms, that type of thing. Period authentic technology has been very interesting to me. When I studied, when I was a youngster and studied World War II, I wasn't interested in battles. I was more interested in the characteristics of the fighter planes or the tanks, that type of thing. And ultimately, if a person's interested in history and technology, their direction of interest will be focused on the Great Pyramid, mm-hmm. because it's one of the high watermarks of ancient technology and one of the most interesting structures built in the distant past.
Well, I was raised close to the Roman city of Ibaracum, otherwise known as York in England, and I can attest to even the smell and the taste of history. And I've had the pleasure of being to the Sphinx, and the energies that surround that region are way beyond anything we can comprehend, I think.
Oh, that's true. That is very true.
Now, for our listeners that do want to follow along with our Stephen and my chat, stevemyers.com or thepump.org, either one will get you to the pages of the information of what we're about to talk to. You know, Stephen, the more I learn of ancient abilities and technologies, the more amazed I become. And after reading your investigation, your book, and revealed the interesting approach that you had about using water during the construction and the ability to move massive rocks on shallow water, it was fascinating. It truly was.
I appreciate that. Another thing that got me interested in this focus of research is that much of what Egyptologists say was the way it was built seems to be wrong, because none of it can be demonstrated. Egyptologists have never made a precise casing stone in the entire science of Egyptology. They've never made a casing stone. They've never moved a heavy stone around the corner of a spiral ramp. It's never been done.
Right.
And just a number of very important techniques and tasks to build the Great Pyramid have never been accomplished by Egyptologists. And it's very interesting that much of what they say can't stand up to the scientific method. And then that got me thinking about alternative ideas. And there was a fellow called Edward Kunkel who wrote a book that he privately published with very small distribution, very few copies were out there, called Pharaoh's Pump. And it talked about the Great Pyramid being built level by level using water locks, similar to the Erie Canal. Or the Panama Canal. And that was very fascinating. It seemed to be consistent with the direct physical evidence. The casing stones that still remain at the Great Pyramid are cemented together and are watertight. So it's fascinating.
Right. Now, much of the casing from the Great Pyramid has slid off, though, correct? Like it has finally corroded, I believe, on one side especially.
On the Great Pyramid, just a few remain, about 80, all on the bottom level. And based on historical accounts, they were removed to rebuild the city of Cairo in around 1000 AD because there was a big earthquake. And they used the Great Pyramid as a quarry. The casing stones were the highest quality limestone blocks, and they removed them and used them in the city of Cairo.
Right. And I guess, yeah, that would make sense. They would be scavenging for any kind of material at that after a devastation like that, right?
Right.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, but during construction, they were used, like I say, in conjunction with water locks to impound water in the Great Pyramid, and it was built level by level. There's a few pictures on our website that are from the book and that show what the water locks look like going up, you know, the side of the Great Pyramid.
Okay, so we the Great Pyramid, now you had mentioned in your work that up until about 1830 there used to be a huge wall around the pyramid, which would have basically been the original reservoir for this water that you discuss. Am I correct?
Yes. That wall originally was there in the 1830s around the Great Pyramid. The early researchers drew that wall when they drew pictures of the Great Pyramid, and it was measured by early Egyptologists and all that. But it is gone now, and that impounded, similar to what Herodotus, the 5th century BC historian, talked about, that the Great Pyramid was like an island in a lake. And we feel that that lake was impounded by that wall, and that was part that was used in the building process, but also was where the water on the Giza Plateau was used for the input of the water pump.
Right. Now, the Herodotus did mention that to live within the Giza region, all you had to do was plant your seeds and step back and allow the water to take over. It was that moist at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, of course, you look at it, and it's quite different. But the water sources around that area at the time were much, much different than they are today.
Yes, and I believe that when the Great Pyramid was built, which is quite a while earlier than Herodotus' visit to Egypt, it was even differenter than it was in the time of Herodotus. So people wonder where the water came from. Herodotus also, for this water pump, Herodotus also described the ancient Lake Maurice and a number of canals and artificial ducts in the Giza Plateau. So that's ultimately the source of water for this massive infrastructure, the Great Pyramid water pump.
Now, that would also fill in the void of how those blocks got to the Great Pyramid using water. If water was the source around the pyramid, it would make sense that they would have used water to move those blocks also.
Absolutely. Egyptologists have never moved the largest stones, a weight that heavy, 70 tons is the largest stones. The entire science of Egyptology has never moved one of those 1 inch. It's never been done. But in the Erie Canal, the barges carried payloads of 70 tons. So in the 1830s, when the Erie Canal was going, they were able to move 70-ton payloads. Here in the 21st century, the entire science of Egyptology cannot move a 70-ton payload.
Yeah, well, I'm going to age myself because I remember being a lad in England watching the horses pull the barges along the canal, and those horses were not working hard at all.
No.
They were just plodding, and these barges were being pulled along like they had nothing on them, and they were fully loaded. So, yes,
yeah.
I do understand that concept, and it would make sense. Now, why is it that the Egyptologists, with all of their grand ideas of how and why the pyramids were built, why is it that they have never proved their statements? Why have they never had to show how it was built? If it was built indeed, how was it done?
Well, they certainly have never done demonstrations necessary to prove that what they say was correct. They've never moved a 70-ton stone 1 inch. They've never made a casing stone. They can't recreate the precision of many of the stones using hand tools, and there's a very good reason for all of that. And the reason is because it's impossible, and that they are incorrect.
So how was it done?
Well, the stones, the big heavy stones, were moved from point A to point B using water and water locks.
Right.
And that is actually a 21st century technology. Many of the large dams incorporate water locks.
Mm-hmm.
It's the technology of choice for the 21st century.
Yeah, the St. Lawrence Seaway, I mean, has, 111 different water locks, I think it has.
Yes.
Get through it.
Yes.
It's a good method of moving water around, for sure. Did they have that? Was that technology used in their society prior to building the pyramids? Was that technology known?
I'm not sure. The focus of our research is on that specific construction project, the Great Pyramid. I believe that there were water locks from the Nile all the way up to the building site.
Mm-hmm.
And then from as construction progressed, those additional water locks were on the went up the side of the Great Pyramid, mm-hmm. zigzagged up as construction progressed. And again, at our site, thepump.org, we have a number of pictures showing that process. And that's how it was constructed. So it was a kind of high technology and built to be infrastructure to help the civilization that built it. In fact, the Great Pyramid, I think, was a prosperity machine. That it transformed that civilization that built it. It provided prosperity through irrigation, probably water-powered machinery, some other purposes, including compressed air or industrial applications and other applications we don't even know about.
Right.
So it's amazing. Our foundation, we're trying to give glory to the past, but also provide a vision for the future for using this ancient technology in modern times.
Right. So we're looking back about 4,700 years in technology. It's 2,500 BC, I think, was the...
That's what the Egyptologists say,
yeah.
But they can't even get one casing stone right.
Right.
So
it could be much older.
It could be much older, and also much of what we're told is true may not be true. And specifically, the chronology of the construction of the pyramids may be much different than Egyptologists have told us a number of other things could be different. Certainly the purpose of the Great Pyramid could be much different than what Egyptologists had tell us.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I most definitely don't buy the ramp theory, because just the distance of the ramp that would be required to build something of that magnitude. I think the far most top point it would take a ramp of close to 5 miles.
Yes,
it makes no sense whatsoever that they would construct in that manner.
Yeah, it's literally impossible. In fact, Herodotus talks to the priests, which were probably tour guides, and they never mentioned a ramp. They mentioned machines that had short wooden planks that brought the stones up level by level. Now, people interpret that as saying, oh, it was levers. No, water locks, the doors on pivots, are generally, in the early days, were made out of wood, short wooden planks, which were used as the doors in the water locks. So that's another way to understand what Herodotus was told.
Right. Now, of course, we're going on records that were written at that time, and he was known to be a jokester also. So you have to read into him sometimes that of what he speaks of. But I do get the general gist of what you're saying with him and the connection to the pyramids for certain, because his were the most clear and concise.
Certainly, he was told by people that. Maybe they didn't know exactly how it was built, but there was like a kernel of truth in what they were saying, probably stories about the stones being floated in place somehow. But how that was done, we think, was with water locks.
Right. And the water locks would measure up to the casing holes that are in the side of the Great Pyramid, because there are definite holes that you can see where it appears that something was attached or something belonged there that isn't there now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we feel. And it's really an interesting story. My book talks about the construction process and some of the implications, both about understanding our ancient past,
right,
but also, this is the water pump idea is kind of an interesting technology that is energy efficient and ultimately could benefit mankind, help us get off of our addiction to oil,
right.
And it's just the reason why the Great Pyramid has so many passages and chambers, not that there was changes of plans, but it was a complex water pumping machine. And our foundation is dedicated in redeveloping this ancient technology so we can help our modern world.
Right. And I do understand that, and that's a noble cause. And I tell you what, let's take a quick break. When we come back in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, we'll talk more about how the Great Pyramid is a pumping machine, how you see it and how it is constructed and why it makes sense to you as the pump. Sound good?
Sounds wonderful.
All right. We'll be right back right after this.
When we come back, Steve Myers, Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid, right after this. Night Zone Radio is a research tool for those who wish to investigate, understand, and become informed on paranormal activity. The following information is presented in good faith as we continue to seek the truth, thinking outside of the box. And we remind all listeners, KVMTOR, you are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com.
In the shadows of the Night Zone tonight,
Mr. Stephen Myers,
author of
Lost Technologies, knowledges of the Great Pyramid when we return.
The ancient Sumerian text, just in a very broad overview, basically tell us that these Anunnaki came from space and landed on the Earth in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. They began to set up a colony that they called Eden.
Let the future tell the truth.
This is Night Zone Radio on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Not much question at all, but there's life throughout the moon. No for sure about it.
There's a monolith there, a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object that goes around Mars once in 7 hours. When people find out about that, they're going to say, who put that there? God put it there.
Nostradamus and the Antichrist, codenamed Mabus, with John Holt in the Night Zone.
Anunnaki came from space and landed on the Earth in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. They began to set up a colony that they called Eden.
According to Genesis, Eden, or Eden, is where Adam was created from dust and Eve from one of his ribs. Others, however, have a more high-tech version of how human life began.
The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered. We remind all of our listeners, KVMTOR, your host, Colin Knight.
In the shadows of the Night Zone tonight,
Mr. Stephen Myers,
author of
Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid.
And Steve, as we talk about the Great Pyramid and the methods of building and the fact that the Egyptologists haven't come up with a good explanation, and let's be frank about it, their theories don't hold water, pardon the pun. so I think from reading the information on your website and seeing the diagrams of description, because it's difficult on radio to have somebody visualize what we're trying to conceive, that each floor, if you will, of this pyramid is filled with water, where the next stones are floated, and with lock systems, they are raised up to the next level, put into place, and once that level is ready, it is flooded, and the construction continues. Am I reading this correctly?
You've got a tremendous handle on it. Yes, it's just like you say. They build. Let's start over. Imagine the first level of casing that in place. Just imagine that with your mind's eye.
Right.
Well, if that they're cemented together and watertight, if that area in there is filled up, then you have a pond on the Giza Plateau.
Right.
Now imagine water locks from the Nile all the way up to that pond that connect right into that pond.
Right.
You could bring stones up effortlessly from the Nile all the way up into the pond impounded by the first level of casing stones.
Right.
And then those interior stones would be set in place. They were brought up on barges, set in place. When that pond, in effect, is filled up, then the first level of the Great Pyramid is completed. Then they put on the next level of casing stones all the way around on top of the first level.
Right.
And also a water lock that connects from the other water lock all the way up to the next level.
Right.
And then fill that up with water, that pond, so it's higher pond, and then the stones on barges come all the way up into that pond and fill that all the way full, and then the second level of the Great Pyramid is completed.
And those locks would be only raising their freight one level of casing stones.
Correct. Each lock, locks that are hooked together, if you will, connected end to end. That's a flight of locks, and there would be a flight of locks stair-stepping up the Great Pyramid as it was under construction,
right.
Again, level by level.
Mm-hmm. And I see we do have a caller on the line. I'm curious to what the call is all about. So just hold on a second. Good evening, 210. You are on the air. Your first name, geographical location, and a question, if you have a question for our listener, for our guest.
Hold on a second. Yeah, this is the Boogeyman. How you doing?
I'm losing him. Hold on a second. Okay, go ahead.
Pyramids, I thought you're, you know, I guess some of your show were somehow built with water. Can you give me a theory, please? I just kind of came in on it. Sorry if I missed it.
Okay. The contention is that the Great Pyramid was built with the transportation use of water for the stones into a pond, into the base of the casings, and then a lock system stepped up per level to create the Great Pyramid. Am I close there, Stephen?
No, you're just right on, 100%.
Gotta love it when that's right. Now, remember, the pyramid, we're talking about the oldest and largest of the three pyramids in the Giza. So this is 4,700 years that we can count on. The rest is subject to argument. It's definitely the oldest of the seven wonders in the ancient world. Now, what I don't understand is, where did we get this misconception that pyramids were built to bury pharaohs and kings and the likes? Where did that come from?
Early Egyptologists were, if I can say this, not much more than tomb robbers. Some of the very early ones were adventurers, is another term. And if you're a tomb robber and you're looking for gold and treasure to sell to the museums, and you see the Great Pyramid, well, you know, you want it to have gold in it. And just like if you're a hammer, the world is a nail.
Right.
So Egyptologists say, well, evidently, because there's no mummy in the Great Pyramid or no treasure, evidently tomb robbers were able to steal it before they were.
Okay.
And it's just the idea that they have. There's been several ideas about the Great Pyramids. In the Middle Ages, they were thought to be granaries that were mentioned in the Bible. The Bible says that there's big buildings in Egypt that were granaries. Well, if the pyramids are big buildings in Egypt, well, in the Middle Ages, they thought, oh, well, it must be granaries.
Yeah.
And then now, the Egyptologists say that there was a tomb. No mummy has ever been found in any tomb.
Hmm. And yet they cling on to this this idea that it is to help them move to the afterworld and the likes.
Yes, all researchers have the same direct physical evidence, but they have different interpretations of that evidence. Most Egyptologists, if they come, if they see a large structure like a pyramid, they assign societal or religious or symbolic purposes to it, and that way they don't really have to deal with how it was made, and they don't have to really explain how. They say they understand the culture of ancient Egypt,
right. But
they can't show how those people were able to create the extreme precision of the components and move the very heavy payloads.
Right.
So they just say that it was a tomb, and that's good enough, I guess.
So let's go on the premise that that it was actually a pumping system. Why would there be an alignment with certain astrological signs? Why would that seem to play a part of this whole construction?
There's a lot of talk and diagrams on the internet of events pointing towards stars.
Right.
And I think that's what you're getting at.
Yeah, yeah.
They point to stars, but anything that points up points to stars.
Points to something.
The Empire State Building, it points to a star.
Right.
The cannons on the battleship Missouri, they all point to stars. The pencils in the pencil up on my desk point to stars.
Yeah. I get your point. It's
yeah.
And the legend was built to fit the issue, as opposed
right.
to right. You know, it's and that does make a lot of sense.
There's a lot of people that take the evidence and then they add in the computations. And they come up with elaborate theories about the Great Pyramid, you know, and a whole vast array of contradictory theories.
Right.
But what our foundation is trying to do is start with a clean slate and say, hey, there's a big structure over there. Let's see if we can understand how it was built. And if we can understand that, then maybe that'll give us a clue as to why it was built. And we think water played an important part in both how it was built, and also why it was built.
Okay. Now, if this this Great Pyramid was in fact built by the water method, and that it did at the end of when it is created, it is full of water, if you will, and,
mm-hmm.
and has the capability of filling with water. The downflow from that water would be the pressure that would be used to distribute it. Am I correct?
Well, water entered the Great Pyramid water pump down the descending passage, and then it went clear down to the passage 100 feet below the Great Pyramid, the chamber called the subterranean chamber, and it operated similar to a hydraulic ram water pump, but much more sophisticated. The book talks about how the pump works and that type of thing with diagrams.
Mm-hmm.
But after it passed through the subterranean chamber, it went up to the queen's chamber, then through the king's chamber, and ultimately out the king's chamber vents.
Hmm. Impressive.
It is impressive.
Now, where the water was a continuous flow into this subterranean chamber?
It was actually in that part of it, it was more pulsating. It would travel, the amount of water in the descending passage is 88 tons.
Right.
And that moving water acted like a liquid piston to compress air in the subterranean chamber. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, with doors on pivots that were described in antiquity that are now gone,
right.
which were like valves.
Like butterfly valves.
Correct.
Yeah.
They would open and close automatically, and ultimately the compressed air would push water up into the grand gallery. And ultimately, although it was quite elaborate as to how it works, and it's talked about in the book, but ultimately, it'll go out the King's Chamber vents.
Okay. Now, I have a question coming in from our virtual studio. It was actually the same gentleman that asked about how the water played a part in building the pyramids. Where did all the water come from? What was the source?
Okay, ultimately, the ancient Lake Maurice, which is still there, it's much smaller now than it was in antiquity. That lake, you can still, people that study the lake have measured its ancient shoreline, and it was much bigger lake than it is now. But anyway, Herodotus, again, described canals or conduits from that lake to the Great Pyramid, believe it or not. And that's the source of water to this water pumping machine.
Interesting.
In the last 40 centuries, a lot of that has changed, certainly.
Right.
In the topography.
And during that time, too, I was doing a little research, and during that time, too, there was a river called the Phoenix that
mm-hmm.
Ceases to exist now, that flowed from the mountains and brought fresh, clean water down into the valleys, and it's interesting to see then compared to now, and then listen to the stories that these places were tombs, if you will, and
mm-hmm.
and it something just doesn't smell right. There was a great deal of work done for a dead guy, and no matter how much you worship a dead guy, the new ruler would most certainly be more important than the dead guy, if you understand, you know?
Absolutely.
So,
in civilizations, let's say our civilization, we build very large structures at rivers to serve a purpose, hydroelectric dams. And in ancient Egypt, they built very large structures near the river to serve a purpose, to be infrastructure for their civilization. And our research is specific to the Great Pyramid, but we felt that that was a large structure without any ornamentation, without any formal writing inside it, with bare passages and chambers to be a water pump. How do long, open chambers stop tomb robbers?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It doesn't really fit the tomb theory.
Have you found any evidence of the water pump system, or have you done any scale model testing of the pyramid and its passages to see what kind of system it would be?
Yes. The evidence, there's a tremendous amount of evidence at the Giza Plateau to support the idea that water was a significant factor in its construction. The main evidence is that the casing stones were cemented together with very strong bonding agent to be watertight. That's not to keep the rain out, because it doesn't rain over there in Egypt,
right,
but that's to keep water in. And there's a whole host of things like that. But yes, Edward Kunkel, who essentially originated the theory, did a lot of experimentation with scale models and that type of thing. And we have a facility here at our foundation that we are doing some experimentation with components and sub-assemblies. But that's the most cost-intensive part of our research,
right,
and our activities is building the pump, to redevelop this ancient high technology that was created by geniuses. But, yeah, that's what we're doing. That's the purpose of our foundation and our mission statement.
Right.
And we've had some very interesting successes and our developing this technology.
And of course, once again, you are a non-profit 501 C3 organization. So,
mm-hmm.
You're not getting government grants and huge amounts of corporate sponsorship to fulfill your mandate. Yeah, this is by whatever you can put together and keep going with, right? Am I correct?
Right. Yeah. Funding has been an issue and it's been a struggle. To be honest with you, I'm a better author than I am a grant writer. So if anyone out there has got any tips, any type of help would be appreciated. We accept prayer, or if you want a link on from your site to our site, that would help us. Or just to tell people in your address book, to email people about our website, certainly to get the book and read it to become familiar with our theory. So there's a lot of ways people can help. And just contact us at thepump.org. If they have any questions, we have a frequently asked questions page. We have our goals and our mission statement. So there's a lot people can do if they want to become involved, certainly. We plan on doing a documentary, kind of a YouTube-quality documentary, because it's quite visual, this construction process. So if anyone is good at making animations, that would help us a lot.
And I think that would help a lot, because it is difficult on radio to give the visual. And
right.
I think if people go to your site and look at the diagrams that are up there, they will get the grasp a lot easier on how these layers of a pyramid were created. I think once they see the visual, they will be able to tie it in with what we're discussing.
Right. And then certainly the YouTube video will help. That's actually our next goal that we're going to do in-house with some volunteer help. and then possibly use that to pitch to a network for a network documentary type of thing. And all of these things, we have a number of irons in the fire, and they all kind of help and support each of the goals.
Yep.
There's a lot going on.
I think the shows such as Cities of the Underworld would most definitely be interested in something like that, without a doubt, because in the manner that you present it, it is doable with today's technology.
Absolutely. We're not advocating that everyone has a pyramid in their backyard made out of stone.
Right.
People would be able to use modern materials and like barrels, 55-gallon drums, barrels, that type of thing, or plastic enclosures and, PVC pipe, that type of thing. And people could irrigate their farmland themselves. Pumped water can be used to make electricity and help us get off of our addiction of oil. And there's a lot of important things that we're doing. Certainly we're a grassroots organization. For a lot of people, the idea is a hard sell, if you will. But we're seeking some funding for our research and also for some tooling in the facility. So it's it's become my life quest. I've been involved in this for about 10 years doing research, and then now the book has just come out a couple months ago. So things are really starting to go for us now.
And I think you're heading in the right direction. As I say, the information that I've gleaned so far, Steve, it is first rate, without doubt. Tell you what, we're going to do a quick break here, and we'll come back to the last 10. Hang in there, guys.
Thank you.
Nikola Tesla single-handedly changed the world for the benefit of mankind, yet has been rewarded with obscurity. It's time to bring his story out of the shadows and into the light. With his last breath, Nikola gently smiled.
Let the future tell the truth and evaluate each one according to his work and accomplishments. The present is theirs. The future, for which I have really worked, is mine.
Would they only have listened?
Nikola Tesla, an upcoming show in the Night Zone. Watch for the listings on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone.
The ancient Sumerian text, just in a very broad overview, basically tell us that these Anunnaki came from space and landed on the Earth in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. They began to set up a colony that they called Eden.
Phone lines are now open. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
Intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered. We remind all of our listeners, caveat emptor. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knight.
In the shadows of the Night Zone tonight,
Mr. Stephen Myers,
author of
Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid.
And indeed, Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid. You know, Steve, while I was doing some of the background on for tonight's show, I found out that Khufu had a ship that was intact, full-size vessel of an ancient Egypt ship that was buried in a pit, and they pulled it out, and apparently this is in perfect condition.
Yeah. Yeah, I was there in 2004, about 5 years ago now, and saw that ship. And it's a large ship, over 100 feet long, huge. and it is built to be taken apart. How interesting that is.
Huh.
Some have speculated that that ship was used in the pond we were talking about, the casing stones, and people would walk to the front of the ship, and that would draw the bow down, and then you would attach a stone to it, like a 2.5-ton stone, and then the people would walk towards the back, and it would lift the bow up. It would be like a large floating crane, if
like
you will.
Like a fulcrum, yeah.
Like a fulcrum, a floating fulcrum.
Right.
And that, again, is talked about in the book. And then they would move the barge, you know, people standing in this waist-deep water in this pond, move the barge a little bit, and then set the stone down right where it needs to go.
Impressive.
Isn't that interesting?
Impressive. Well, you know that some of the easiest answers are the most difficult found. And every time we come across some kind of scientific wonderment, it's usually the simplest thing that has complicated the whole shebang. Life and mankind is a very complicated source.
Now, that's true. A lot of things that we take for granted was very difficult to get across to people, like the idea that mold on bread could help people.
Right.
Well, a guy named Alexander Fleming figured out penicillin.
Yeah.
But it took him over 20 years to convince the medical community that penicillin was good. They said, oh, it doesn't really work, or oh, it costs too much, or oh, we got other things. Well, finally, penicillin was accepted. The same with Nikola Tesla and alternating current.
Yeah.
He had this idea. He figured it all out in one afternoon. Alternating current, high voltage transmission lines, transformers, and everything else. Went to his college professor, and his professor said, oh, you want electricity to go two directions in the same wire? Oh, no, that'll never work. So he spent 7 years in Europe trying to get funding for his to develop an alternating current. Never could get it in Europe. He had to come to the United States, and ultimately he was able to get funding, and alternating current was developed, and it changed the world.
And to this day, current in Europe is much different than current in North America.
Yes,
and anyone that tries to operate a North American product in Europe, good luck, unless you have a proper adapter.
Right. Yeah, it's a little bit different, that's for sure. It's 50 cycles, and over here it's 60 cycles. And also it's a higher voltage. But anyway, it's all different. So, yes.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting world.
And just not going too far off the subject here, but Nikola Tesla fought all of his lightning for machines that have been proven to have not only worked, but have saved mankind thousands of years as far as scientific discovery is concerned.
Absolutely. I agree with that 1,000%. You are correct.
And it's unfortunate he ended his life in the manner that it was ended. And I think mankind is not better off for that, but it, you know.
That's the nature of the human race, is that they treat great inventors very poorly.
They
and
do.
That's always been true.
They do. So tell me, Steve, when you stood there in the presence of the Great Pyramid, with this knowledge in your head and this coming to awareness of how this was built, how did it feel? What was running through your head and through your body?
Well, a lot of people have like a religious experience when they go to the Great Pyramid, but to me, I was in awe, like I was at a industrial park, if you will, an ancient but ultra-modern industrial park with this infrastructure and facility. I, with my mind's eye, I tried to imagine it back when it was built new and still in perfect shape. And functioning, right. It's, you know, that you, I imagine that you could feel the beating of the water inside, like a heartbeat, if you will, and that the water was used to create a civilization that was prosperous and that had leisure. and that the machine did the work, and the people benefited from the Great Pyramid. Not the pyramid wasn't a cost, but a grand investment, right, by a civilization that had high knowledge of physics and the natural world around them.
Now, of course, in the day of the creation of the pyramids, water was everything.
Oh, absolutely.
It was the lifeblood of any nation at that point in time, and many nations have fallen over the use of rivers and streams.
That's correct. They think that some of the cultures in South America, there was extended drought and their civilization fell, but water is very important, and they predict that in the future there'll be water wars over that natural resource in Africa and Central Asia and a few other places where water is getting very scarce. And we think that this type of technology will help alleviate those environmental strains on some of those cultures. So that's what we're all about.
Well, I know they're very, very concerned right now in the Antarctic with two massive ice floes that have broken away from the shield. And,
yes, it just happened.
These things are massive, and apparently they're very concerned that the amount of water that these ice contains could create flooding on an unprecedented level if it ever melted.
That's true, and a lot of that that type of thing is, I believe, caused by some type of climate change. But I don't know if it's man-made or not. That's beyond the scope of our research. But if we can get off of our addiction of oil and have alternative energy systems, then we can maybe alleviate some of this climate change and reduce some of the hazardous problems that are caused by it.
Right. I'm with you on that, and I'd like to do another show with you regarding good ecology for mankind, because I think you're onto something. Especially with the greenery and the foliage taking out the C2 out of the air. Steve, we're out of time, of course. Your book is The Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid, Steve Myers, and your website is thepump.org. Am I correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So all of our listeners, head for thepump.org and have a look around and check out what Steve's all about. And Stephen, it's been an absolute pleasure, sir. We'll have you back again real soon, I hope.
Well, thank you, Colin. I really appreciated it.
Thank you, sir. You have yourself a super night. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Stephen Myers. And we're at the end of the night. I can't believe we've banged through 60 minutes already. It's been a great deal of fun, and we'll do this again next week. Until then. Hey, Night Zoners, got a minute? I'm sure we all know someone who is experiencing difficult times during this recession, either with unemployment or financial problems, or in relationships. I have friends like that. I would like to remind you that we are all in this together. So if you have friends experiencing hardships, support them with your advice. If you have acquaintances who are having rough times, nurture them with your friendship. Show them kindness. If you have family members who are having difficulties, show them your love. And if you have people in your life who have almost given up, throw them a lifeline of kindness. Remember the golden rule, but for the grace of God, go I. Blessings upon your household. Until then, next time we meet.
This has been a Night Zone production in association with BlogTalkRadio.com.
Colin. You there?